I was grateful that as my first award and jury experience, the panel wasn't filled or didn't have, pardon my language, an asshole. We could engage with each other and debate robustly without fear of, oh, somebody's voice will drown out somebody else's.
There is a reason that that is a gold and that is a bronze.
But the tricky part is that once you award something, you can't bring it down. You have to be so technical and careful about how you award that.
Suddenly, everyone, it was like a light bulb went on. Everyone was like, actually, that's the one. And we were unanimous in awarding it a Grand Prix.
It had a simplicity to it. And I think simplicity is so underrated as an element in creativity, that the idea should just feel so wonderfully simple to get, wonderfully simple when you see how it pulls out.
To get to gold, there had to be no thread you could pull on.
This is Talking in Creative Circles, the official podcast of The Creative Circle, the voice of South Africa's advertising industry, in partnership with Kagiso Media Radio.
Everyone wants to know what wins at Cannes. The more useful question is why it wins. I'm Danny Pinch, ECD at Accenture Song Cape Town, and I'm your guest host for this episode of Talking in Creative Circles. Today, we're getting a behind-the-scenes view from South African judges who sat inside the jury rooms. I'm joined by Sohana Gordhan, CCO at Lovesong, who judged the Glass Lions, and Jabulani Segege, Group ECD at Machine, who judged audio and radio. And I'm going to share some of my own experience from the Entertainment Lions for Gaming jury. Now that you're both back from that strange parallel universe of Cannes, how are you doing?
I don't think I'm back yet in my heart and my mind. I think the experience was so, it leaves such an indelible mark on you that it doesn't go away so quickly. So I'm still feeling the after effects of Cannes in terms of what a university of learning it was for me, especially in the judging room.
And Javi, I know you got back before the rest of us. So is it like a long distance memory or is part of you still there?
I think the experience is very much still fresh in my memory, especially because I've been asked to talk about it and write about it. And I think just the atmosphere, because it's different, I think, sometimes going as a delegate versus going as a judge, an awarding judge. And suddenly creates a whole different atmosphere and you view the festival so differently. So I think that was what was very interesting to me and has caused a shift in perspective.
Yeah, that's so true. So I've been to Cannes twice. I went once 10 years ago as a delegate and I went now as a judge. It's such a pleasure and a privilege to go as a judge because you get to arrive and the venue is completely empty. There's just a few people wandering around. There's this nice, quiet, slightly liminal quality to wandering around the Palais. And then the floodgates open. But it does kind of ease you into the experience. And it's such a different experience sitting in a dark room with no windows with a group of fellow ad nerds talking about work for 2 days. And then the explosion of the rest of Lions. So let's start with the judging. Give us a taste of how things went behind the scenes on your award categories. Sohana, should we start with you? What did you judge?
Yes, sure. I judged the category that I've personally dreamed of judging since its inception in 2015. And that's the Glass Lion for Change, which is literally about any work that is putting any wrongs in the world right. It's about work that is really shining a light on marginalized people. It started off as a gender-focused category. And I think last year and this year were the first years that it was broadening that category. So yeah, I think it's quite a special category and it's very meaningful because also all the proceeds go to a charity and it's really, really about creativity, but absolutely about impact.
Tell me a bit about the rest of your jury, because that was one of the things I found super interesting was somebody behind the scenes, like months ago, creates this little chosen family for you to go and judge things with. And it's quite a diverse mix, quite carefully selected. What kind of people were on your jury?
It was really also one of the most diverse panels I've sat on. It was a total of 9 jurors, and then the 10th is the jury president. Ours was Monique Nelson from UWG. And I really think that, especially with a category like Glass, we're looking at people that have been abandoned, forgotten, haven't been given agency voice. So what is important is that there's representation in that room from different types of people, different professional experiences, but also what those people stand for. And I think what I found really interesting is that at any given moment, we could turn to anyone in the room who had a certain level of expertise. So, for example, we had a Paralympic medalist in our category. We had someone who was born in Afghanistan, is an activist, singer, rapper. We've got someone with great experience working with Dove. We had someone who's like their lives focus on culture at Lego. And then me from South Africa. So we've got this really vast panel. Quite interestingly, 8 women and only 1 man. So also, you know, quite unusual. When I judged Cannes in 2016, it was a much bigger panel. It was about 21 and only 5 of those were women. So there was something really special about being able to gather perspectives and really lean into our different jurors based on who they are and what they know and what they've experienced.
Amazing. Javid, tell me a bit about radio and audio. Was there any radio in it this year? I'm always curious.
I think it's very interesting that obviously the category was probably used to be radio back in the day. And the way it's evolved from became audio and radio and having these subcategories which allow any innovative use of audio and sound to be able to be entered, going up against traditional radio. And I think in the very beginning, when we were chatting even online before we met up in person, was how do we look at it? Because how do you judge something that's got like innovation in kind of audio sound in audio versus a traditional radio spot? But you've got to be able to go and look at it and go, I guess it all comes back down to the idea. And I think that's the thing. It's like, what is the idea for that specific subcategory? And how is it then crafted? And having that, because obviously, you know, I'm loath to use the term, but I'll call it developed versus developing countries, you know. So the kind of developed countries, obviously, they've kind of got more tech-enabled pieces of work when it comes to audio. Whereas the developing kind of countries, they're still going very much, a large proportion of the population still listens to radio. They can access things through radio. So, of course, radio spots are still a big medium. It was, the juxtaposition was kind of very interesting because you had people from like Germany and Brazil. So I think all continents were actually represented. So it really was kind of like a UN panel. And it was interesting to be able to get the different insights around certain pieces of work. And I think when you talk about how we connected, I was grateful that as my first award in jury experience, the panel wasn't filled or didn't have, pardon my language, an asshole. You know, so that was a pleasure because we could engage with each other and debate robustly without fear of, oh, somebody's voice will drown out somebody else's. And our jury president, Oriel Alain Davis, he was very kind of meticulous and deliberate and intentional about allowing everybody's voices to be heard. You could ask, cool, so what do you think, Fran? What do you think, Jabu? So I'm grateful for that, that it was a positive experience and there's learning to take back from that. So even when we participate in judging experiences here locally, you also know how to kind of help influence it in a positive way when you're in that room.
Yeah, I really found that as well.
I wanted to add that the way the process worked was conducive to a bit of cohesion before we actually got into the process. So the very first thing we received was an email from our president, Monique Nelson, outlining what her expectations, her interpretation of this panel and this category was, which is really super helpful because it provides a blueprint to go back to. And then we had a session where we just met up mid-judging just to talk, not even about the work, but how, just generally, how are we feeling? Are there any things we want to raise? Which was also really helpful. And then the next time we met was for the actual shortlisting. So I think that cohesion and the intimacy of the jury is really important because, like Jabu said, there's no hiding in your jury. You everybody gets to speak. Everybody adds value.
For sure. Yeah, I found that. I mean, I have heard, I won't say horror stories, but I've heard of like difficulties on panels. But I think they seem to have really nailed how to run a jury, or at least my experience was very positive. And I feel really blessed to be part of that little group of people for 2 days. And there is something about the kind of jury room situation where you quite quickly connect with people, or I found I did, and become quite close in quite a short space of time. But so because I was doing gaming, I think I had quite an interesting mix of people. So yes, there were some ad people that were working in gaming or marketing for games, which was also really interesting people to meet. But also there was people developing games. So people that were coming from the Pokemon company that actually run Pokemon games. So, you know, it's a really interesting mix of people with different perspectives. And I found we kind of started to respect each other's different takes. One of the things I found about the experience is you kind of come in having seen a lot of the work in the shortlisting process. But then as you get going, I find it's quite malleable. Like your brain starts to change on things given other people's input. And I guess that's when a jury's working well, is when you don't come in with a fixed position, but the people around you kind of help you get to a decision about how you really feel about it. And so many pieces I maybe missed or didn't think was, you know, my favorites at the start of the process, I found I was championing, like I'd made the work myself by the end of those 2 days. And like really, you know, taking it personally how these pieces of work were doing. It must be weird for the teams that worked on it when you've got these people that feel like they're part of your team that you've never met in a jury room. But that definitely seemed to have happened. Okay, before we get too far and start talking about specific pieces of work, one thing I found super useful, and this was explained before I went, so it was not so much of a surprise, was how Cannes Lions works in comparison with other award shows. So Hannah, I think you've said you've judged twice before. Maybe you could just talk us about that process from shortlisting through to gold, because it's quite interesting for people to know just how, like when you reach silver, gold, how much conversation has been had about your piece of work. You want to just give us an overview of the process and then we'll get into some work.
Yeah, I think that the Cannes judging process is one of the most robust I've experienced, in the sense that you can speak quite freely about how you feel about the work. In this case of Glass Lions, you get presented to, the finalists present their work to you. So what I feel is that, and in the same in 2016 when I judged, you leave no stone unturned. So it's kind of really very comprehensive in terms of discussing the work. There's an opportunity to say everything you want to say, to have those conflicts and come back and forth, and to be able to be open to change your mind. So what I feel is that the process leaves you feeling really proud at the end that you've built a portfolio as a jury, that you're putting forward work you deem as the best portfolio of work for your category for this year. So it starts with, you receive all your online judging. You have to mark it according to 1 to 3 being like definitely not a shortlist, 4 to 5 being like, I think it's 4 to 5 being maybe a shortlist, and then like 6 to 7 definitely a shortlist. Then you meet up and you discuss based on the scoring what lands as a shortlist, and they ask you to kind of remove a few. So they have a sort of statistic as to what you should hit as an acceptable number of shortlists. But also specifically for Glass, those finalists get invited to Cannes to present their work. So it can't be too large a number of finalists. And once you make that list, each one's allowed to motivate for maybe one more, and at the discretion of the jury president and the votes, we can choose to bring more into that shortlist. But that number's not endless. You can't bring more than one up. And then once you're in Cannes, the people that have been shortlisted present on day one and day two, and then on day three, which is the final day, is when you discuss an award medal. And it's such a serious personal process. And I say personal because every member of that jury takes that job so seriously. There's such a respect around it. And I have to say, there's a general feeling of wanting to award instead of the other way around, and wanting to award for the right reasons. And by the time you award, it works quite differently, in the sense that when you get to the finalists, or the ones that you have to now award, you first vote all of them into a bronze. Then from bronze, you vote up to silver, then from silver up to gold, and gold into Grand Prix. But the tricky part is that once you award something, you can't bring it down. So there's like a technical mathematical thing that has to go on in the back of your mind as you're scoring, as you're voting, that if you pick one piece to be a silver, you know, and in our case, you could only do one silver, one bronze, one gold, and one Grand Prix. You have to be so technical and careful about how you award that. So I know that's a very long story, but it's to talk about the comfort you feel at the end of it, knowing that you worked very hard as a jury to make sure that you're all really, really confident about what's been put forward at the end.
Yeah, that raising up as you go was quite new to me and did require, it does make you think very carefully about what you're raising up, knowing that you can't go back again. So once it's a bronze, it's a bronze. Once it's a silver. And that pool is getting smaller and smaller as you go up. But I do think what one thing I came away from it as somebody that enters awards regularly, well, Cannes Lions specifically, is you know that work has been really thoroughly looked at. I think there is a temptation, maybe it's me as a creative person, when you see something awarded and you watch the two-minute case study and that's your only exposure really to it. Sometimes you go, why did that get a gold? I really like this bronze. That should have been a gold, clearly. I think the thing I took was like, there is a reason that is a gold and that is a bronze. It's not necessarily definitive. There is a subjectiveness to it. A different group of people might get to a different conclusion, but there is a strong reason why something gets raised up to gold and something is a bronze, and it's been very carefully looked at. So I have new respect for anything that got to a gold. And if I was feeling a little unsure about something in a different category, I would go and have a careful look at it. And I found that like, oh, I see what they probably latched on to make this into a gold. Let's talk about audio a bit. In your category, how did you guys go about awarding? What did work have to do to get from a short list all the way up to a gold? Javu?
Yeah, I think Sue's kind of like broken down like the science behind it, like in generally. I would have loved to hear some people present their work and tell us why they did the work in the way that they did. But we had case studies and boards sometimes and the actual material itself to go on. We had 506 entries in our category and we had to whittle that down. And I think we got to 34. I mean, that judging process online, again, I think the thing is, you think you have all the time in the world? Trust me, you don't, if you want to do a thorough job. So you have to kind of pace yourself. No, okay, great. Every day you'll probably be looking at X amount of entries because they keep getting added to you each day. And it's important that you give each piece of work the time and respect it deserves, because there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that went into creating that work, creating the case study, creating the entry to actually then enter. And I think when we got to the stage when we got the long list and got to take it down to the short list of 34, it was like asking, like, you know, and I think we were very, because there's that, it's audio and radio and it's got the subcategories are very important, because often you'd find a piece of work might be living across four things and you go, if you're going to raise it up, in which categories is it going into? You know, is it relevant? And I think that's the thing, because sometimes we have seen, and we've probably been guilty of it, maybe in the beginning of our careers, or even in the middle, where we're going, we've got a good piece of work, now we enter it regardless. We aren't tailoring it for the particular category, but that's a learning. If you are going to enter it, tailor it so that it works and make sure that it's relevant to the subcategory, so that its context and how the impact it made or how it showed up actually makes sense, because that's how the stuff then gets whittled down. But then I think also it's the innovation that we end up looking for. You look for the innovation and obviously then the impact as well. And you're looking and going, how did this thing live? How would it have been received by people? Again, it's another thing where you go, you're looking for work that didn't create work for the sake of creating work for the advertising community or marketing community. It's going, what did it actually do for people? You know, and where did it live? And how did it show up there? And the thing of actually, you know, raising up and realizing you can't raise down was a very important thing, because you literally did, like, everybody kind of held back and like, it's like there was no rushing through. It was like, cool, let's discuss why we think this should go up. And after you've kind of voted it in. And I think also interesting enough, which I didn't know, is that maybe it might have been this year, the way numbers were mandated, going, you're going to have these X amount of bronze, X amount of silver, X amount of gold. And also the fact that when you elevated something to, if you're elevating something to gold, it wasn't normally, you know, the three things get gold and then one of them gets elevated Grand Prix. It's no, you're going to have to, from the three remaining things or whatever, choose the two that will get gold and the one automatically goes to Grand Prix. And we've been working through at a steady pace and we're kind of like, oh no, we're on track. We, you know, we might even finish 30 minutes early. You know, and we got to the Grand Prix. We ended up spending, I remember I looked at the time, it was just over 90 minutes, 1.5 hours, debating the Grand Prix. And we were kind of evenly split between two pieces And then there was like a third piece, which seemed like a dark horse. And it's only when somebody was like, you know what, guys, we're not kind of like reaching consensus around between which of these two. Let's look at the third piece. Suddenly, everyone, it was like a light bulb went on. Everybody's like, actually, that's the one. And we were unanimous in awarding it a Grand Prix. So that was a very like interesting moment, you know, kind of to go again, like, you know, giving things their time, because you might have gone, we've seen it, but you actually go back and go, and then again, you look and go, oh, it's use in a single market. Actually, it's perfect for this category. Its innovation is great. The application is impeccable, and the impact, you can't debate it. There we go, guys.
Yeah, the twists and turns of juries are really nerdily interesting. What I found was the gaming category is actually incredibly diverse. I mean, what is a game is a question we were asking ourselves. And you might tend to think, oh, this is something that's on an Xbox. You know, you think of like football games, you think of, you know, first-person shooter games. Like people tend to think of that as gaming as a default. And we had all kinds of things. We had tabletop role playing, which was, you know, I'm a nerd for that. So I love that there was some of that in there. There was calming games where you had to stroke a capybara, not a real capybara, but a fake capybara, which everybody got obsessed with. And I'm actually a bit sad still. It was only a short list. I would have raised it up further. We had gaming flutes where you control the game by playing a flute, which was next to impossible. I don't know how they did it. And then we did have things that were happening within games itself. So it was quite difficult to judge apples with apples at times. But what I found was you could come up with something incredibly creative, like really punchy. It had to have a real world impact that would get you to a bronze, which is an amazing achievement in itself. And it's a bit of a cliche to say that, but it really is true. Like you get a bronze and you've made really interesting work. What I found was to get to gold, there had to be no thread you could pull on. You had to clearly see there was real world impact. You had to feel that within the community it was made for, within the scope that it was made for, that it really landed. Not necessarily it was huge, like Super Bowl level work, but just within the world it's in, it had to feel like it was landing significantly. So I think when people wonder, like, why did this get a bronze? Why did this get a gold? There was probably a thread you could have pulled on that bronze, which was not quite fully formed. It may be that that thread was unfair, but you can only work on what's in a case study. And sometimes, if a case study doesn't tell you how many people played something, that's a thread you can pull on. So I think people do have to be careful when they're doing entries not to leave threads or not to leave things unsaid that you know a jury is going to ask anyway. You might as well put that information in. Okay, we've talked quite a lot about process. Shall we talk about some work that you really connected with? So, Hannah, should we come back to you? Like, give us one or two pieces you just kind of personally adopted along the way on your panel.
What I loved about the jury we were on is that there was a singular mission we all had. So there was one particular piece that we all felt the energy around it, and we felt that it was a unanimous piece that deserved gold. And the only reason it couldn't go higher was because it was a nonprofit and a charity, and you can't award a Grand Prix to a piece like that. But when you speak about pulling on the threads, it was the piece that was without any faults. It had all the things we were looking for from a point of view of impact. It had a simplicity to it. And I think simplicity is so underrated as an element in creativity that the idea should just feel so wonderfully simple to get, wonderfully simple when you see how it pulls out. And I think that this piece, it's called the Maori Roll Call, still remains one of my favorite pieces because it was very short in execution time. I think it was 3 weeks. And it was a very real problem in that the New Zealand Parliament has only seven, Maori people only have seven seats. And so this piece was about getting, there's a general roll call and a Maori roll call. And it was about garnering more Maori people to vote and to have one more seat, basically, in the New Zealand Parliament. And the way they went about it was extremely simple and beautiful. And it was just about seeing people's names up on billboards, getting a very special Maori activist to, in a TV spot, to read the names of the Maori people that were on the roll call. And it was done in such a way that it was incredibly moving. So it sounds like really simple. Oh, it's just names, but there's power in seeing people's names and people kind of putting themselves forward to vote. And I think part of it was also little details like the way the film was shot and the kind of design elements where it was combining Maori culture and what you see in the tiling on the floors of New Zealand Parliament. The way the work was presented to us was by a team of the one member of the team is the head of Maori culture at his agency. And so he came and he presented us and he did the haka. And I felt it like hit me in my heart. And I know as South Africans, when we see the haka on the rugby field, it's a different story. But I think what I want to say about that piece is that it achieved impact. It was creatively beautiful. It stood confidently. When they answered the questions, they answered it with great conviction. And it's like there was nothing that we could fault about that piece. So, yeah, I think it's one of my favorites.
Okay, I'm definitely going to check that one out. Jabu, what did you connect with? Give me one piece that you really loved.
One piece I really loved was the piece that got the Grand Prix, the Cokie Alarmed. And I think that similar to Suhana's example, I think some of the work and actually seeing the trend, some of the work that actually won big was ones that were rooted, their insight and challenge was so rooted in the market, in the actual, in the community or country that they were in. Like they felt inevitable. Like it made perfect sense. As you said, you couldn't unravel. There were no strings to pull to undo this thing. Like everything synced up perfectly. And finding an interesting solution to a problem that only that community or market faced was a thing because it's based in Puerto Rico and the Cokie is a small frog. Imagine it's a version of a Haadedaa to somebody who's not from South Africa, right? If someone comes to South Africa and hear the Haadedaa and you're really shaking your head, you're like, I'm from South Africa. I don't like Haadedaas either. But the Cokie, it's all stemmed from like this kind of like this one tourist, American tourist was there. They posted a question on Reddit going, this Cokie, you know, like I hear the sound and I can't sleep, but like, how do I kill it? And then it blew up and people in Puerto Rico are like, how dare you try and kill, you know, one of like our most beloved national animals. And it's an endangered species. And from there, I think just like the way that Hyundai, a South Korean brand, was able to show up in Puerto Rico at a moment when there was this conversation around this thing that was sort of linked to a national pride and identity, you know, because you're going, how does the foreign brand actually show up? But the way then they were able to do that was that, you know, when tourists, they were like, at the very first place that tourists kind of like experience on the land, which is they land and go get a rental, that's where we'll actually get them. And they changed the fleet of cars so that when you heard the immobilizer sound, boop, boop, it changed to the sound of the Cokie. I was going to try and imitate it now. I realize it'll be bad.
But let's hear it.
Yeah. So, and that became the first port of call. And like, that's the sound. So when they landed on the island, when they got into the vehicles, they heard the sound of the island, you know, and that was became an education job from the very first time they got there. And I thought that was so amazing where, you know, like this kind of like this issue was able to be solved like in such a way. And like, and kudos to the client because they could have gone, you know what? Because all they did, what they had to do with the cars was to swap out this electronic unit, which had the sound, and put in another one programmed with the frog sound. Client could have gone, you know, guys, it's too much effort. But kudos to them for going, you know what, actually, we can help change the perceptions around this and educate people using what we've got. Let's do it. And it garnered so much impact that even people who were living there who had dice, they went back to the dealerships going, I would like the sound installed in my car. And people, when ordering new cars, were going, can I get the cars with that sound installed? So it did not only solve that problem, it solved the problem around the challenge for the Cokie and people not being educated to know that it needs to be protected. It's a sound of the island. But also inadvertently, it also created kind of like a business success for the brand. And I think you don't need to lead potentially going, what can it do for our brand? It's like, what can we do to kind of like paraphrase the JFK quote, you know, not ask not what you can do, what you can do for the business, what the business can do for the people. And then it'll follow, the success with the business will follow. So that was very kind of like interesting. I mean, and then I think there was another one where, you know, I think you asked, you know, there's the one which obviously championed all the way, but then, you know, there's always the one, I'm sure as well, Suhana and you, Danny, where it didn't make it out of the bronze. It got a dirty gold, you know, and it was for Skinny, the Kiwi New Zealand telco. And what they did was they got people to sign up, and its subcategory was use of humor. And I thought it was perfect for it, where you would agree that your call every 30 seconds could be disturbed by an ad, which was potentially 10 seconds. And again, it might sound invasive, but they were so funnily written. And the fact that you got people to voluntarily go, I want to hear an ad so that I can make free phone calls, you know, to other skinny numbers. And it worked like it worked gangbusters. And, you know, the business like was off the hook. But it was very interesting to like hear because like you'd be talking on the phone, you know, I'd be talking to you, Danny, and, you know, and then the ad would come in and go, congratulations or condolences on whatever you were talking about. But, you know, with Skinny, you can continue talking about it, da 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 da, 10 seconds in and out. And the fact, again, you know, in this age where people are choosing premium packages so that they don't have to listen to ads, that people chose to listen to ads on this kind of like this mobile network, again, was interesting for me.
Yeah, I think that really shows how diverse the audio radio category has become. I always really enjoy seeing what's won there because it's such an interesting mix of things.
Yeah.
So with our category, as I said, we had only one bronze, one silver, one gold Grand Prix. And we motivated for one more, which has to go all the way up the chain. But that one more had to be a bronze. It couldn't go all the way up. But the piece was called Welcome Back by Sano. And there's a thing that happens sometimes in the judging room where you go, there's a piece that's so relevant to the times we're in. And so timely, so timely. And we've all seen everything that's happening with Trump and ICE and the deportations. And so this piece spoke specifically to the immigrant community, specifically Mexicans being deported out of America. And it was such a brave piece for a brand that has a chain of stores called Tecate in Mexico. And so when Mexicans were being deported and stuck at the border, Tecate decided to employ these people in their little supermarkets. And so it was a lovely kind of kickback comment to deportation where you're taking people who have literally left with nothing, the clothes on their back, and they're financially disenfranchised and giving them opportunity and work. But what I loved about it is it's a brand that's looking at this idea from an entrepreneurial point of view, but also about helping a community that's, you know, in dire need. And then the communication that was done for it was really humorous because there's this, you know, we all know this idea of Mexicans being really hardworking. And so the ads were about Americans not being able to survive their normal domestic chores without Mexican people. So there was a lovely sense of humor. And the fact that it came from Mexicans themselves, it wasn't like somebody inputting their own sense of humor on the work. So I think that idea was really powerful because it had proper brand investment, it had humor, it had impact, and it was talking about a very big issue that's relevant right now in the world.
Yeah, it's a great example of talking about a serious issue, but not being serious in how you communicate, which I always love work like that. If I had to pick just one to talk about, I mentioned the Capybara calming game, which was my hidden shortlist. You must definitely go check that out. The one I was thinking of talking about today was Silent Cleaning. So this is a Japanese horror cleaning game. And it was one of the ones which I kind of looked at early on, and I think I laughed out loud when I saw this thing. And I thought, this is great. It's definitely going to, it'll shortlist. This is a great shortlist. But, you know, the more we looked at this, the gameplay is basically you have to clean this kind of Resident Evil style haunted house, and you're using cow products. So cows are Japanese, like a very old 100-year-old brand in Japan that basically is cleaning products. So you're using these cleaning products. You have to be quiet, otherwise these monsters will come get you. And you have to use the right cleaning product for the right situation in this haunted house. So in order to do well at the game, you actually have to go and read the labels of the products. Mm. And you can do it in the game, but you have to understand the product to pick the right product for the right cleaning situation. And then kind of some weird survival horror on top of that. But I think the genius was it had a very distinct aesthetic, which was very lo-fi. But we had quite a lot of conversation around, well, it feels very like lo-fi and kind of, I don't want to use the word cheap, but it doesn't feel like a polished Xbox game. And yet people really loved it. Within its community, it did really well for an indie game on Steam that you could download for free. You could see that people really responded and were playing it as an actual game. This is an advert in a game. But people were responding to it like, this is a game I really want to play. It's not particularly long, but people really got into it. So I thought it was just such a great example of how advertising can get into the gaming world. You know, they really understood that genre of, it's kind of a sub-genre of gaming They really understood the mechanics of it, clearly loved it, and really understood the opportunity of, in a humorous way, getting that product into this game. Mm.
Did you get to play the games itself, some of them?
So if it was still available in the shortlisting process, we played some of them. One of the things I actually said in the room as feedback is, I think it's really important to play the games. If there is a game entered, I think we need a setup and to have an actual play of it, because what looks good in a case study may not necessarily translate in actual gameplay. But the other thing about gaming is it's not necessarily just games that are being entered. In fact, I think it was quite a high bar to enter a game that you produced as a brand and win with it. Quite a lot of it was marketing for a game or an activation or activity in a game, working with gaming influencers. So I would suggest people go and have a look at that category, because sadly, there was no South African entries at all in it. And I was thinking about it. I think about 50% of the work that got awarded, I could have seen coming from this market. Some things I think you could have only done with a big kind of Super Bowl gaming moment. There was that kind of winner in there. But things like the silent cleaning, I think that could have come from here. There was the gaming flute I mentioned right at the start, where they gave influencers a kind of challenge, gaming influencers, which apparently is a thing, the challenge to try and play a game by controlling it with a flute. This is audio, but you can't see me miming playing a flute currently. They actually sent us this flute. It was so well made and crafted, and it was so hilarious to watch these people trying to use it to control as a game controller.
Yeah,
I think this was Skittles that was behind it, and it's kind of typical Skittles chaos. So it did fit the brand it was coming from. But you know, a few of these, I really thought we should be looking at this category. If you look at some categories that are so hard to enter, like film, we should be looking at some of these categories like gaming and going for it, because I'm not saying it's easy to win, but I'm saying it's accessible for us to win in categories like this. And certainly we have a gaming culture that is a bit underrepresented in branding. I could keep going on about gaming for a long, long time, but we're going to run out of time soon. So I do want to give some very quick advice for people entering next year's Lions, or, you know, any award show. What would be your tips, quick tips, that you would give people in terms of putting an entry together? Sahana, should we go back to you?
Yes. I mean, I'll speak specifically for Glass, but I do think it applies to all categories, really. Your case video needs to tell the narrative of the idea really simply. You know, if it feels confusing, you've already lost your audience. So it needs to... the problem needs to be clear, the solution needs to be clear, and the way you solved it. And I will say this, and it's maybe a controversial thing to say, but before I even see the numbers, the statistics at the end of the video where they go into impressions and this much and that, so many million views or whatever it is, you need to have felt the impact of that work before you see the actual statistics. Because by then you're just... you know, you're just registering numbers. But if you see that, like the way I explained the Maori roll call, their impact was so evident and so clear in that it takes 300,000 votes to get one more seat, and they got that one more seat. And so I think that's really important, is outlining your problem very clearly, telling the narrative of the idea, making sure that the impact is felt, and then making sure that you move people. Your video is the first thing that speaks to the jury. I mean, we were lucky that we had presentations, but we need to feel moved by the piece of work before we even get into a presentation. There is something our jury president said as a sort of, that I felt was a like a singular golden thread that I looked for in all the work. And she used the term, this is Monique Nelson, she used the term load-bearing creativity. And I love that a lot, because I felt like it's true for any work we do, actually. And so everything I looked at with that lens. Is it creative, but is it carrying some depth and weight of and able to achieve impact? So I would say those are the main things. It's just in how you consider entering.
Cool. Jabba, what do you have? What's your one hot tip for doing entries next year?
I think for... looking at the work, one of the things we did speak about is, yes, you've got the case studies, but can your board also give you exactly the story, give you the story, that snapshot and the headline about what it is? And do you get the sense of the challenge or problem and what the solution was on that board? So yes, case studies can be beautiful and crafted, but if that one thing, because obviously sometimes your case is in 2 minutes, it can't tell you certain things. Make sure your board does. And I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier. The difference between that silver and the gold and potentially the Grand Prix is that one thing that potentially you know the jury might ask or you suspect. So rather have it in there than not. And everything obviously has got to be in aid of telling the story about the piece of work and giving it the most context and why it's different to potentially anything else.
Yeah, I also just want to say something about not being performative or disingenuous. Like, it's so easy to read that, and I think we all feel that. And it's very easy to fluff up your award entry with tropes and things that say, not only did it achieve so much in sales, but it changed the whole country's view. You know, I think we can fill it with superlatives, but it's much more kind of beneficial to you if you're genuine about the impact, genuine about what the work achieved, because I think juries can see through all the kind of candy on top of an idea. So if you can get to the core of it simply, that's also important.
Just want to add, because there was a piece where we were all rooting for it. And then on day one of the judging, obviously, when we were going through the shortlist, one of the Lions jury, kind of like the, not the jury members, but like the team, came in and said, you know, the piece you were looking at in the video, it said this piece of work, da 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 da, and it ended up getting the laws changed. And then they came in the first day and they were like, you know what, guys, there's now this caveat which has been supplied by the agency saying, so it wasn't because the laws were changed because of this work. This work was one of the things that helped get the laws changed. And we're like, okay, that's interesting. Cool, great. It's still dear to our hearts, but yes. Then the next day, they came and said, sorry, guys, that piece has been removed, not only in your category, across other categories as well. So that thing of embellishing, you've got to watch out for it because it will become your worst enemy because you're going, oh, it's just to help, but just a slight boost. But if somebody goes and really looks at it and picks it and going, okay, so this one piece of work, that was the sole reason, because that's what it's saying that got the laws changed. That becomes a thing. So yeah, be very careful of hyperbolizing or embellishing your case study.
Yeah, I think that's a real learning. I mean, they have a team of fact checkers live available to the panels. And if you've got a question, they'll go and figure something out and ask the people involved. So I think if you had a question on something, you could pull at that thread if you wanted to. And you could very quickly spot a silent fact. If there was a missing fact that you would have put in if it was good, you could see that it was there. And you could either just realize, well, there was something missing here, or you could go and ask about it. And then the answer was kind of a bit sheepish in some cases. I was like, well, 2000 people played this, probably shouldn't have entered this, guys. But, you know, so yeah, try not to hide things.
And this is why I'm really grateful that there was a South African voice in our jury, because there was a piece called The Unburied Casket from South Africa. And one of the jurors asked the question of that work because it says that it got the attention of the president and it helped declare gender-based violence as a national disaster. And he asked that question. He said, can you attribute the work to that outcome? And fortunately, I could back it up because I've experienced the work. I actually researched it as well. And so I was able to answer that question confidently. But you know, we're lucky with glass where, you know, in this situation, I was in the room, but sometimes you might not have someone representing your voice in the room. So it's really important that those big claims are backed up. And yeah, I was really grateful because it was a difference between that thing not being awarded a silver to being, you know, awarded a silver. So yeah.
Yeah, it just shows everybody has a purpose being in that room. You know, it's the place you're from, but it's also your lived experience, it's your discipline experience. Everybody's got a role to provide some context. Okay, well, we have definitely reached our time now. I feel like we could probably keep going after we stop recording, but it's been so awesome to talk to both of you today and, you know, finally people that were in Cannes, and I don't have to feel awkward about talking to about Cannes anymore. You know, I think after a week, people do start to like roll their eyes and shuffle away from you if you start talking about Cannes too much. But lots to learn. Thanks so much for sharing your insights from the judging rooms. And let's look forward to hopefully more trips in the future. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much, Danny and Jabu. It was great to talk to you and being able to share our experiences here. That's been really awesome. Thank you.
And thanks, Danny, for inviting us and being able to see the experience through other people's eyes as well. It kind of helps actually enhances, and you go, actually, the thing that I thought I was thinking, actually, it's either the same or, oh, I didn't even think of it like that. So, yeah, so hopefully, what we've been speaking about will help enlighten people and make our work kick ass for the next round. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Talking Creative Circles is available wherever you get your podcasts.